outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, he's back, believe it or not, after a, four or five month hiatus here. Brad Cummings is back in the studio. I was going to say in the house.
I know, it's awesome, but like I'm in my office. You're sitting behind a tranquil waterfall that just looks like gorgeous and tranquil.
It's 10 seconds of video from my wife's garden. Yeah, it's got
nice.
A little waterfall.
Yeah. Very good. You loop very well.
If you watch carefully, you can tell where the loop changes because the shadows have changed in 10 seconds. It's amazing, but... mostly if you're not looking at it too closely, it works. And
hey, but we were in person, even though we were socially distanced.
When? A week
just
ago.
A few days ago.
I know.
We were in person. I thought it was very rebellious of you.
Rebellious? We're allowed that.
Okay.
Yeah. No, we did.
I'm not sure in this Soviet states of California.
Whoa, you're getting a little attitude, are you, from the governor?
Just a little bit. Been locked down for too long.
Just been locked up. Have you not gotten out at all? Are you staying pretty?
No, we've gotten out. We've gotten out. I'm done with the mask thing. I ditched the mask. I just kind of went, you know what? That's not healthy.
I don't know. I got to wear the mask when I go to the golf course. Not when I play, but when you check in and go through all that, need a mask.
I know. You can't go into stores without a mask. I just go like, you know what? I don't know.
Then we'll see how much we need it going to Denver and back. We'll probably sure need it now and then. But
you're picking up the RV and doing it.
We've got our own little hermetically sealed bubble. So Sarah and I can go see our son. It's been a long time. And you know what? Over the weekend, this is big in the Jacobson family. This is almost as big as a kid. But my son got a second puppy. So there's a new grand puppy.
Well, that's close.
Welcome.
My eldest boy had a baby girl that we've yet to be able to hold, but we're getting on a plane and we'll be in our tube for 5 hours breathing each other's air. It'll be awesome. And then we're going to go to the land of riots where they have the biggest riots. And then we're going to go hug our granddaughter. It'll be great.
You're down here too. You got the riots right down here as well. But yeah. Man, I was going to ask you about that. Scott, welcome. First of all, welcome to the Grandpa Club, because that's pretty
awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a...
I'm a pretty youthful grandpa.
That's what I thought, too, but you'll figure it out.
I think I am.
Yeah, and your grandpas were probably that age, too, when you started, but you just don't remember.
They might have been. I just know I got a bunch of other friends that are older than me that I beat them to grandpahood.
Yeah, well, that's a good deal.
I feel pretty impressed.
I've got people being parents at 55 and 60, so that's kind of a long, hard road to go. They may never see grandkids.
Nice.
Yeah. How old is the new one? And what's her name?
Jayla Joy Cummings. She was birthed at home in a little jacuzzi tub at the house. We were a little anxious about that, but yeah. Everything turned out fantastic. It was far better than if she was in the hospital. And good. So... everything turned out fine. Mommy did well. Jared was just the absolute trooper. He's been having fun being a work from home dad too. So been fantastic.
Yeah.
They were kind of bummed like, oh gosh, how do we juggle all this stuff? And then, so the being locked in and work from home has turned out fantastic
for them. Yeah. Good. They kept the job.
So
yeah.
We're thankful for video teleconferencing stuff and, so we get pictures and we can see her and we've been able to talk with her and now we're looking forward to actually seeing her in person.
And then nothing like that little one sleeping on your shoulder, man. I remember those days with Julie. They were special. So I'm glad you get to go back.
Yeah, it's kind of wild because it's like, you know, I'm thrilled to see her, but it's not, I'll be honest, it's not as real as I think it will be when all of a sudden we're there.
No, it won't be. Yeah, I hear you. It wasn't real to me till I walked into the room where Julia just had the child and I saw Amy laying on her shoulder and I just melted. I didn't expect it. I was looking forward to grabbing Julie and telling her how proud I was that she got through this 20, 30 hours of labor, whatever it was. But man,
wow,
just seeing that thing and going, that's my daughter's little girl. Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Kind of fun.
It is kind of fun. So have you been surviving the pandemic other than that? You've had your own set of physical ailments.
I've never tested positive for COVID, but I've had every symptom there is known to man, and even nasal surgery with it, with a couple of nasty infections that took two, three rounds of really tough antibiotics to try to knock it out. So,
and your wife tests positive, but you don't.
My wife tested positive for the antibodies. I don't. And the doctor's kind of like, you know, I think these tests don't work.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know. I am past it. I can actually breathe through my nasal passages. I've never known what that's like. That's pretty kind of cool.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So I'm trying to do that more regularly. I haven't been able to do that for the longest time. And, I was 100% blocked at one point and I couldn't breathe at all. That was not good.
Out your nose.
Out my nose. I couldn't. So I
you could breathe, right?
I couldn't sleep very well at all.
No, I hear that. Because you've never been a great sleeper. So
no, and that's largely why, because I can't sleep more than an hour, hour and a half. And I'm just going, what's the point of this? This is not restoring. So I've been in, I think, you know, adrenal failure for a long while.
Oh, man.
But they're starting to get me back to a place of health. And it's been kind of crazy with this whole COVID thing, because I think as I have tried to understand it, and I have a lot of the, you know, the dangerous categories, and I'm trying to get healthy. It's been a deep dive of, you know, what do we need to do to just live with a normal, healthy immune system and how to boost it. So that's what I've been doing for the last 4 months, getting a medical degree and getting healthy.
Oh, good for you. That should pay dividends going forward. Yeah,
I think so. It makes my wife happy. I don't make organic jokes as much as I used to.
Oh, are you eating more organic stuff?
I'm eating healthy food that's actually alive, as opposed to the processed dead stuff that wasn't helping me.
Oh, wow. Have you lost some weight in all this?
Yes, I
looks
have.
Like I have, yeah.
I'm sure it's somewhere in my office, but it's certainly not on my body.
Yeah, well, that's good. Good to hear. So all is well in Cummings land, except for what everybody else is dealing with.
Well, for the things that matter, all is well. And for the things I have no power over, we just kind of smile.
And you're not planning on,
like, well, whatever.
And you're not planning on marching on Sacramento anytime soon to get the governor?
No, I mean, okay. I do look at all this and I just kind of like, wow, there is so much here. I don't think any of these get solved by the simplistic reductionism that most people chant.
No, gosh. And that's true on both sides. You know,
yeah.
I was talking about that with someone this morning. There's just no... The way our society works right now is you're forced into these binary extremes that it's not that either. You know, just if you show some support for African Americans, obviously you hate cops. No, I can actually do both. I can love cops. I can hate the abuse that cops make toward African Americans. I can do both. Yeah. Thank you very much.
I can love both parties and realize there's problems.
Right. And I can help, if people want, reform the police department without defunding it and leaving us without police at all. So, yeah.
You know, I'm going to vote for you.
No, I'm not running.
I think there's reasonableness there.
I'm not running.
That would be I just wonder if there isn't a new thing to protest for, you know, reasonableness and normalness.
Well, the language of healing. No, the language of healing speaks to that. I've got a blog I've got half written. I haven't finished yet. I don't know when I will. Talks about where are the reasonable people? Where are they? They're not in political office, doesn't seem like. Where's the reasonable humans, even who disagree violently on policies, can't sit down and say, what can we do between us that will serve what you want and serve what I want?
They are not currently on social media.
Nope, nor in Washington, D.C., unfortunately, nor in Sacramento.
No, my son lives there. He says, Dad, you will not understand how swampy the swamp really is. And I'm going like, wow, because I already thought it was pretty swampy.
It's sad. That part is sad. Even the rhetoric of the last week or two is all pretty binary. You've got to be all in one camp or you're all in another camp.
Yeah, and it's like, I think the thing that I find so frustrating is there are reasonable things to be very angry about. And then there are massive agendas behind some of the funding of things that are just going like, and I don't support that. And so how do you agree with the very appropriate complaints without being prey to someone else's agenda? Not easy.
Yeah, you just don't be prey. I was almost prey last night. Man.
What? Tell me.
I had a dream. And in the middle of the dream,
praise your dream.
Andy and I are hunting footballs. He got some football in a field. Andy, Austin, little Austin and I, we're looking for a football. We find two of his footballs in this field, and there's a mountain lion sitting next to him. And he doesn't see the mountain lion. It's all faded into the grasses and stuff. So he just runs after the football. And boy, the lion gets up and just going to have that little kid for lunch. So I had to jump between him and the lion.
Wow.
And, oh, my gosh. I sat there for
grandpa there. Nice going. Proud of you.
Yeah, I'm not sure I'd do it in real life. I'd like to think you would.
But it's a dream. So we'll go with it.
Oh, my gosh. This thing was got up. And so I jumped in the way at first. It just got all upset and just started walking away. And so then I started to go get the footballs. And then it was obvious that he had been collecting footballs. So he turns around. He comes back at me. And I mean, he is just livid, claws fully unleashed. And he's just swiping at the air. And he's coming closer at me. And then I woke up, thank God. Oh, my gosh. I stayed in there, but boy.
So what'd you have for dinner last night?
I didn't actually have dinner last night, so maybe that's the problem. So
this is a fasting dream. Wow.
No, I wasn't fasting. Sundays we have dinner at lunch, and then we usually dessert it Sunday night, or I do.
Oh, there you go.
But then we didn't dessert it Sunday night because Sarah made chocolate chip cookies in the afternoon. So
what does it mean that a mountain lion has been collecting footballs?
I don't know. I think that's got something to do with the NFL. And the season coming up, I have no idea.
Were you kneeling down or not?
No, I wasn't kneeling at the moment, but I was about to be. No, but I think you're right. It is really hard to have a reasoned conversation without somebody either judging you to be further down a road than you are. And I've got that a lot from my blog last week. Oh, obviously, you're a liberal Democrat now. No, obviously, I'm not. I'm not one of those. But if you stick up for people who have injustice, with people who think there's no injustice left in America, you've just bought into a false mainstream media narrative, kind of gobbledygook. And I think I'm eyes wide open. There are things I like about what's going on in the protest movement, and there's things I don't like about it.
Yeah.
And I don't let people put me in one box. You try putting me in a box, I'm going to tell you I'm not in that box. I'm just going to tell you. Now, you can all have to believe me, but
you're not a boxer.
I don't believe it. All those boxes are not drawn in places where I go, yes, I resonate with all of that, or even 80% of it. That's the problem with the boxes, right? Because I'll take some of that, and I'll take some of that. And I think...
Yeah, I mean, I think with most terms and most labels, it's like I first want a glossary of definition, of terms, because I don't know what it means to everybody.
Right.
And it's like, you know, I don't think I've yet found a group that I'm like, yeah, that's me. I'm one of those. Because yeah. I don't know that I fit all the definition and all the points that people ascribe to it. And that is really sort of frustrating because I don't think most people seem to have the patience to really listen so as to hear.
True enough. But that doesn't affect my life. If they can't, they can't.
Not in the least. I do find it affects mine.
It doesn't affect mine. If you want
to. That's awesome.
Yeah, I don't care what you think of what I think. If you're wrong, you're wrong. If you want to know what I really think, come talk to me. If you're going to tell me what I think, then I'm already done with you. I'm just not. Oh. I get to tell you what I think. You get to tell me what you think. And if I misunderstand you, you get to set me straight. And I don't mind. But man, when people have already decided they know what I think better than I know what I think, then we're really done having a conversation.
That's when you know that they're already reacting to you, huh?
Yeah, I can love you, but it'll be from a distance. At least that's how I see it.
Well, so the lockdown is working for you.
But yeah, lockdown's working just fine. No, actually, I've had more connections with people during this lockdown than I had before just because of this Zoom thing and all the other ways that we're connecting with folks. So I've had more, and because I've been writing some stuff, I've got more of the judgment kinds of stuff. Well, then this means that. And then they want me to listen to this ultra-conservative thing where I go, you know what, there's some of that. I take about 30% of that I could get on board with. And I'm about the same way when I hear a leftist guy talk. I 30% of that, I like what you're saying, but then what you want to do with it is another matter entirely.
Wow, because here's – I think trying to, like – help my daughter process through this because she's got, you know, all her friends at upper arms and, you know, it's like, let's go protest. And it's kind of like, we live in a community that has probably, you know, 40% of the people that live here are first responders, policemen, everything else. And we went through borderline where it's like, everyone cheered those people.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, what's happened in this neighborhood that has all of a sudden made those people demonized? Well, nothing, you know, not in this particular neighborhood. And do you have some sense of, when you're decrying this, you know, that's actually your friend's parent that you're decrying. So, I mean, we've had to work through a bunch of stuff. And what's been a bummer is you just hear on both sides this endless arguing about sort of trying to declare the problem or dismiss the problem. And I don't hear an awful lot of discussion about real solutions.
Yeah, not yet. I think there's so much anger right now that'll have to come eventually. Because some of the things that are being thrown out there are certainly not going to happen. And so then what is? We're going to have to come back again. Where are the reasonable people? Where are some reasoned people?
I'd like to think that you know, like kind of when we did the shack, there's that mass missing middle out there. I'd like to think that the bulk of people actually are reasonable. I think they're being ginned into their corners now. But I think on the whole, I think most people are desiring to say, hey, what is a genuinely workable solution that meaningfully addresses the real problems that we can all kind of, you know, I don't think people enjoy the near Civil War rhetoric fighting.
No, and I've always said, I think about 75 to 80% of people really are able to have that kind of reasoned discussion. The problem is they don't have the microphones.
No, that's not in the media.
And the absence of having those reasonable alternatives, then people get caught up in this binary trap. I've got to be that or that, and I'd rather be more that than that. So I'm that. And I think if we give them the chance to have more reasonable, that's where my email load is anyway. I have so much from people saying, wow, I'm thinking about this differently, but I'm not all the way over there, and I'm not all the way over there, and how can we talk? So I'm hopeful that's going to change.
Yep. Jesus help us.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, the reason I thought we'd get together this week, you and I, when you were here last week, we sat socially distanced on my back patio, had a great chance to catch up with each other. But I was telling you about this one email I got, and we got into a pretty interesting discussion about it. I thought that'd be fun for us to interact about. I'd just done a podcast with my friend Kyle, and we talked about that if you, which is the conditional statements of Scripture, right? If you remain in me and my words remain in you, bear much fruit, you know, just those kinds of if clause. And that came from a question too, from a listener. And then some people took offense to that. Not a lot, a few. And it was like, somehow if there's a conditional sentence in the Bible, and this is not how it was said to me, I'll read you the email in a minute. But what happened was there can't be, after the cross, we have unconditional love now. So there's no conditions to God. And I'm like going, okay, I think people really misunderstand, first of all, which is why I don't use the term unconditional love. I don't. I don't think love has conditions in it. But life has conditions to it. If you do this, this will happen. And if you, it's not God saying, well, if you do that, I'll reward you. I'm going to give you fruit if you remain in my words. No, the words and the remaining is a process of fruit bearing.
There's a harvest for every seed you sow, buddy.
you don't have to, and God's not going to hate you if you don't. But I'm telling you, here's what this one. This was actually a comment on the blog. Said, I've been listening to your podcast for some time now, and as much as I enjoy them, I think you are on the fence between law and grace. And we all know those two don't mix. The law was nailed to the cross 2,000 years ago. It's been done away with, yet you continually go back to it to confirm your standing with God, which I don't even know where he gets that. I've never gone back to that.
See, again, I think that's the unfortunate use of words in the way that certain people define them.
So he said, I suggest you leave the law out of trying to please God. He is not pleased with anybody other than his son. And through the son's faith, we have been redeemed. Nothing to do with our actions.
That's not even true.
Okay, have at it, dude.
I'm sorry, my opinion is showing. That's not true biblically.
What's not true? Back up. What's not true?
That nobody is pleasing to the Lord?
Yeah. That bothers me too.
I'm sorry.
God actually hates you, but because he loves Jesus and Jesus died, so okay, he'll tolerate you now. No.
You know what's so amazing to me, and this is missed every Christmas? The angel showed up. And they declared some awesome, great news. And they said with man that God was pleased. And I got to tell you, I've never heard that shouted any time, anywhere. And I just got blown away one time reading that, going like, oh, my gosh, we missed a major part of the communication here.
I read that in a book called A Man Like No Other.
Yeah, I know. I think that's kind of why we put that in there.
Yeah, but I love that thought, because we think God was so ticked he sent his son into the world. God just freaking man. And humanity, honestly, when Christ comes, humanity's at not one of its high points of,
no,
of
no,
life. Yeah, and
not culture. So
yes. That was all kinds of horrible stuff going on, and yet God saying, with men I'm well pleased. That's just amazing.
I know. And I just go like, why do we put that at arm's distance in the name of exalting God? Because it's like, I don't, the God I am in love with and relate to is a very relational being who has feelings about me. I don't always please him. I know I don't. But I know that on the whole, I feel his pleasure. That's part of what fuels me. You know, it's the joy of the Lord that is my strength. And when I know that I am part of what brings him joy, gosh, I'm full of life.
I love that. I love how God's pleasure in us is always there. I mean, to that part, this, you know, grace crowd, whatever, they're right. God's grace allows us him to see who we really are past our failures and all that kind of stuff. At the same time, he's inviting us into a different way of living, to actually live loved, not just have the theology of love, but actually live in that love.
You mean actual transformation? Are you going there, Wayne?
Yes, and it's a condition for heaven. No, it's not. It's not conditional. You can live like a rat if you want to. You'll still be loved, but that doesn't mean you're living loved. The prodigal son is still loved when he's lost in the pigs and he's eating pig slop. He's still loved by his father.
Yeah.
He just has no, and his father's still yearning for the day you come home. And so the father still takes pleasure in the son, but the son is taking no pleasure in the father. And thus the son gets no benefit from it till he comes home.
Yeah. Cause I got a bunch of friends that I love the confessions of what they're enamored with and the declarations that they have over our lives and the freedom that seems to speak about. But then I think, you know, one of the things we had talked about is I struggle with the just declaration as if because I said it, then that is it. And I'm looking at their life, my life, and I'm going like, I don't see either one of us lives actually living up to the expression you just declared. And for me, my Christian life has been a whole lot more partnership of walking it out.
Yeah, with him.
Yeah.
Not to please him. That's not the motive.
No.
But it's to enjoy his pleasure in us by actually following, cooperating.
And actually becoming more like him. I am a lot further down the journey than 10 years ago.
About 10 years
down. I'm a lot more down the journey than just 4 months ago because of responding and relating to him in ways that he was addressing me.
I think maybe Caleb shed some light on the same blog. He added this. He said, I find reading scripture, I'm very conscious of being on the wrong side of the if you statements. Most of the time, it's not good news to me. And I find myself saying, yep, I'm not there. Often, I feel a huge gulf between where I am and where I should be to find the trailhead or find fruit in God that's wonderful. Now, I think that maybe point to what's going on here, because people who maybe understand grace and love and really cling to the term unconditional love, because I think they battle guilt all the time. And they anything that makes me feel guilty has got to be bad. It's got to be the wrong news. The gospel is I feel good no matter what. So they see guilt being resolved by their theological point of view rather than guilt was disarmed at the cross. If you're feeling guilt, you're feeling something false.
Unless you've actually done something for which real guilt does emerge, and you need to process that with the Savior.
But if you're just reading an if you statement, and you end up with, oh my gosh, I'm a horrible, I should be further along than I am, I should. To me, that's the same religious thinking you think you're free of. Because it's not the transformation.
Not so free.
Yeah, it's not free. And it's as if the transformation was overnight. That we're not in a progress here. Like you talked about, I look back and see things God's done in my life and I rejoice. And I look down the road at things he hasn't done yet. And I'm going, can't wait for that to happen. It's not, oh, I'm a horrible Christian. I should be past that by now. I'm not past that by now. I'm still struggling with that. So doesn't make me this horrible, I'm on the wrong side of the if statement kind of thing. I think that's still a lot of that religious conditioning. And so when I've got to keep focusing on, hey, man, there's no guilt. Everything's great. Nothing I do to please God. I don't have any responsibility. I don't have any way to respond. I think people are just kind of self-medicating with the false notion of how this life works.
And I think they set themselves up for natural disappointment if it's just a declaration. You know, I mean, it's like, I love all of the promises. I'm not living in the fullness of them, thank you. But I love them.
You feel
them.
Guilty about that, Brad?
Not so much.
Good.
Not, I mean, honestly, not so much. Good. I live knowing that I do have a savior because I needed one. I didn't just like, oh, let's add that just in case. It's more like, no, I'm pretty sure I need one.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure my frustration is not the same thing as God's transformation. His priority list and mine don't always match. And when I get really frustrated, chances are I'm not seeing the things that are more important to him that he is at work in. And so I'm learning to gauge my sort of view and perspective a little more in sync with where he's at. So I'm not living so frustrated and disappointed expecting something that isn't his present activity for me. And my gosh, that's been a whole lot better.
And that's not to make God happy. That really is about our fullness, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to find
more joy doing it that way.
To me, that's what the whole thing is. It's about freedom, right? And if I get so excited, that's what we were talking about on the patio the other day was just like, people get to the trailhead and there's this wonderful thing about you are loved. You are loved just like you are. And I love you and you don't have to do anything to earn your status with me. And that's where they pitch their tent. That's actually just the trailhead.
By the sign.
If you want to go down that trail, really, I love this sign. I love the sign that says unconditional love or grace and joy. And I hear it taught that way. Honestly, grace teachers sometimes, and I don't like the whole hyper grace accusation, but the whole idea of it's just about the sign. It's just about we have grace now. God doesn't require anything of us, and he doesn't require anything of us for salvation. That's true. But he invites us on a journey where I will be your God, you will be my people, and I want to set you free. I want to liberate you from the lies, the deception, the bondages in your life that keeps you from being truly human and truly being who I made you to be. And this is God serving us, inviting us on the trail instead of staring at the sign saying, ooh, that's a lovely sign. It says I don't have to feel guilty. I can always feel happy. I can always feel good. God wants nothing from me. It just the lost in the theology of it instead of going on the journey of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I really have signed up for a taste and see gospel that gets to experience what we talk about. And I get really frustrated when what we talk about is not actually something I'm living out in with joyful experience. And so I end up going like, hey, what's up? You know, I don't get condemned. I don't go like, well, God's not living up to his promises. I just kind of go, there's a partnership that I sort of accept is part of how this happens. I mean, anyone that's ever hiked or climbed mountains as opposed to looked at the map, there's something different about actually going on the hike. There's something different actually getting to the top of the mountain and seeing what that view is like and just taking it in and being overwhelmed by it. I mean, that's just stunning.
And that's why the trailhead is God saying, I think the trailhead is learning to discover just how loved you are. And maybe some people need to be at that trailhead for like 2 or 3 decades because that's all they can process.
Well, the other sign just said he hates you and no one wants to walk down that path.
Well, no, a lot of us spent a lot of time on that path. So we've already been down that path.
That hike sucks.
We're just really grateful to find and even know there's another path. And we get all excited. And then if you're afraid, like even some of this was people reacting to just talking about is some of the statements of Jesus saying, if you remain in me and I remain in you, you'll bear much fruit. Do we throw all that out because that's a conditional clause and you can't have conditional clauses under unconditional love? Then we're throwing it. Now I understand why some people like to say, well, Jesus lived under the old covenant. You don't trust the words of Jesus because he was speaking to people under the old covenant. And I go, no, I don't believe that, man. I believe Jesus was speaking between the two. Yes, he's sometimes speaking to the old covenant, but he's inviting a different kind of followers to him. And that's what we get.
Honestly, has relationship with the living God, walking and talking in the cool of the day, has that really profoundly changed? It's sort of like God said, no, I'm sorry. You're under the old covenant, so we got to have a whole different deal here. Really?
No, he ended that in Jesus. That's why they don't read that. That's over. So anything Jesus said doesn't matter.
Maybe I'm a heretic here.
No, I don't think so.
I kind of think that even in the Old Testament, it isn't what people have made it into.
Oh, absolutely true.
Because it's sort of like, if you look at the life of King David, I'm sorry, he violated an awful lot of it. And he seemed to get the moniker, he's a man after, I think, as in pursuit, after God's own heart, as opposed to full attainment.
Exactly. And he also had the capacity to see through, you know what? All these sacrifices, that's not really what God wants. He wants that broken and contrite heart. And he discovers that in the pit of his own failure. That's where he discovers something about God.
That's a great revelation.
That was truer than what Moses gave them. That we're going to find out. Yeah, the sacrifice. Isaiah says it again. You keep offering these sacrifices. I'm not even coming to your festivals anymore. And you don't even miss me. That's what God's saying to Isaiah. And they're like, what? What? We're having these for you. I mean, he told us to have them. And so we're doing it. Yeah, and it's sad to me because to me, and I've never lost this, even as a young guy, to me, the invitation was to follow him. You know, the whole song, if none go with me, still I will follow. You know, it was always about following him. Now, I admit, 40 years or so, I'm doing that very religiously, and it's not working well, and I'm feeling guilty, frustrated all the time.
Welcome to your wilderness wandering.
And then the last 25 has been, oh, you know what? I'm loved. And this is not about performing for God. This is about letting God transform Wayne so that Wayne can be free to live in the world and express who God is in the world. And that's my delight. That's not my chore. That's not this onerous commandment. It's an invitation into freedom. My goodness, why wouldn't we take it?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite verses is, you know, for God is at work in you, both to will and to do. And I'm going like, I don't think you could get a better promise than that. He's gonna transform my want to's, and then he's going to empower my inability to, so that I can walk with him and experience the joy of the fellowship and the intimacy that yields. That's not a performance thing. I don't want to do this thing without him. And I sort of feel like the crowd that ends up with all their confessions, I end up going like, are you actually enjoying him? I mean, did you talk to him today? Did you hear from him? Are you really relating, or are you just talking about what's on the sign?
And I know I get the feedback from that all the time. People say, well, God's never made himself known to me. God's, you know, I cry out to God. God ignores me. And so it is people who feel like they get really stuck in the only security they have are those theological statements that they put their trust in.
That's a bummer.
We've got, 16 years of the God journey where we're talking about, there's a better journey here. And it's not performance, and it's not doing it for God. It's not even about, this is what God needs for you to be, him to be pleased and you to be saved.
No, it really is a relationship.
The point is the relationship. The point is not even our transformation. It's I want to know you. I want to walk with you. And when you get into circumstances and situations, I have wisdom for you that if you'll lean into what I want to show you, you'll find it easier to get through this than negotiating it with your own painful and distorted views of me and the universe.
I don't sing songs like, I want to pretend you. I don't. I just go like, you know what?
Why not? Why don't
Stop
you?
It. If I can't find where this becomes real, I'm not blaming him, and I'm not going to sit there condemning me, but I am going to say, hey, what gives? Why isn't this working? What gauge in me has just lost its radar so that this doesn't have any semblance of reality? I mean, I I don't like the ethereal confession. I want to say, I want to taste and see so that I actually might know, not just confess.
Yes.
And it's like, the coolest thing for me is the last 20, 30 years has been because I was dissatisfied with just hearing and not walking in. I stopped. I didn't have a hunger strike. I didn't do a pity party. I didn't become a super Pharisee. I simply just says, God, I'm not going to be very good at this if I can't really know that you're there. I've got to know you. I mean, when I was a little kid, all my life, I didn't like the game of baseball, but man, did I play awesome baseball games with just my pitchback. I played both sides. I would be the pitcher. I would be the batter. I'd be the fielder. And I would go through all these games. And it's like, I would have fun because it was just me. And what else do you do? I'd throw the ball up on the roof and then run to the bases. I mean, I did it. I did every position I could to have the fun of simulating baseball. The actual game was way too slow. I didn't enjoy it. But there's been this whole dynamic. I remember watching the movie of A Field of Dreams. And just getting to that point where it's sort of like, you know, hey, he wanted to go out in the field with the rest of the guys. And it's like somehow that wasn't for him. And it was like he was totally bummed because that looked like that was the super exciting thing. But what he ended up getting was the gift of his dad came and they were able to play catch like he remembers like a little boy. And I just remember that part of the movie just so profoundly touched me. I said, Lord, I will plow my field under. I will do anything that you want me to do. And if it's not my portion to go out into the cornfields, so be it. But can I ask this of you? Can we actually play catch? Because if it's just me throwing the ball against the pitchback and playing like I'm pretending to play baseball, I'm sorry. I ran out of gas a long time ago. But if you'll actually play catch, and I'll know that I'm talking to you and you're actually speaking back in a way I can hear, then I'm pretty sure I can follow you and finish this thing.
And it's almost even in the gospel story, it's almost God asking that of us more than we're asking it of him.
That now you just hit something profound.
Yeah. Now it's, can I play catch with you? Oh no, but I got to do that. Can I just play catch with you? I think God just, I just want to enjoy you. And that's why when I talk about grace, I always talk about grace as a portal into a different way of living. Grace is not an end in itself. You can't just take the theology of grace and say, yeah, I've got it now. That's it. That's what I needed. I needed a theology of grace. No, grace, the reality of grace is a portal into the knowing of God and the walking with him without feeling ashamed and unworthy and worthless and a piece of garbage. It allows me to be a friend to God, even though I'm not perfect, even though I mess things up. And where people don't have that sense of what God's real, I loved what you said earlier. The question is not, well, God's failing me or I'm failing God. The question is, what about my tuner? What about my radar is set on something other than God so that God could be right there saying stuff to me and I'm just missing it? And when I try and talk to people that way, I've got one friend especially who's, well, now you're asking me to do something and I'm not going to do anything because the cross is not about doing anything. I'm going, I'm just asking you to have the presence of mind to let God change some of your thinking. Because if you look for God for 40 years and he's not there, my conclusion is you're looking the wrong direction. Maybe if you rotated a quarter of a degree, oh, it's clear. It's just like those old 3D images you used to stare at till it becomes 3D. And it looked, what they call magic pictures or whatever. And you can stare at that thing and go, I can't see it. I can't see it. And then all of a sudden, just the head, whatever. And then there's a dinosaur in that geometric pattern. I think that's where it is with God and so many of us. But people get a little bit hostile. Well, if God wanted me to see, he wouldn't make it so difficult. It's not the nature of the God I know.
Already there, they're hurting with the sense of rejection and failure.
Yes.
And I'm not going to condemn that person. I'm not going to, you know, yeah, totally. You suck. I mean, you just go like, I totally get it. I do.
Yep.
But don't stay there. Don't camp there. I'm sorry. There is the fulfillment of this stuff. And it doesn't happen because all of a sudden you just do the things right.
Right. And that's what everybody's thinking. Well, I don't read my Bible right. Don't pray right. Don't. And that's where we've made discipleship the wrong thing. No, it's about the knowing of God and learning that you're loved is the first step, that I am loved. And then I'm learning to live in that love with him. So I become enamored with him. Love is not my commitment to God and what I'm saying, but I actually enjoy the presence. I love God's voice, nature, purpose in my life. I don't control it. He's not there every day. He's not there every time. Well, he's there every day, but I don't see him every day. I don't hear him every day. I can ask him stuff and I may not see for weeks or months what he wants me to see. I'm very comfortable letting the relationship unfold, but I wouldn't try to live this life without him. I just wouldn't.
No, yeah, I'm sorry. Not worth it. Moses got it so right when God kind of said, hey, you know, y'all can go into the promised land. There it is. Go on. I'm just not going with you. I know far too many people that said, okay, well, send us a postcard. and I go like, I don't know what it was with Moses that he had the presence of mind to say, you know, hey, we're not going. And if you're not going with us, we're not going. And I end up with a wilderness with him is far better than a promised land without.
Yeah, I like that.
And it's
that.
Like, if we don't understand that as central, and then I think what you said a little earlier is so important to try to help people get God's the one who wants this more than you and I.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I look at the global shutdown. Never before in all of the earth and all of known human history has there ever been a moment like this on the planet where the whole thing has had to quiet down. And everyone can still have all their agendas, all their conspiracies, all their attitudes, but there is something awesome in the one thing is I think God was wanting to quiet us and to bring us where we had a chance out of all the noise that just, I think, has most everyone in tons of dis-ease to simply find a place of refreshing and a chance to get quiet inside. And I just know that for so many of my friends and believers, this has been the most glorious season of cocooned difficulty that they've ever had to go through. But their intimacy with God has been totally supercharged because all the noise and the needless activity of their otherwise way too busy life has been forced into a quieter river. And it has just been awesome. I just go like, wow, when do we get this chance? I'm going like, I don't want life to go back to normal. I would like things to open up and things to be free again, but I don't want my life to go back to what it was.
Well, I hope a lot of people are finding what you're saying, that greater grace, that greater blessing in a slower down life and not being so pummeled by things. But it seems already we're ramping up again. Back into that fevered kind of pitch and haven't even liberated us yet.
And it's weird because you can take on a perception that it's like, I don't have a choice. I'm like, no, I actually think you do.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.